You are now listening to the Big Beyond Belief podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
This is Leo Costa coming to you from Serious Growth. On our show today, we have from Iron Man Magazine, Denny and Denise Kekos. How are you guys doing today?
Real good, thank you.
Doing great, Leo. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Did I get the introduction right from Iron Man Magazine?
From Iron Man Magazine, as well as the INBA, PNBA, International Natural Bodybuilding Organization.
There you go. I was really excited to hear that because, Danny, I want to ask you real quick. I assume you know Platts?
Yeah, Tom Platts, sure.
Did you ever train with him?
No, I have not, no.
Okay. And, I was telling Denise when we first were talking that late 80s, maybe 90s, I used to do a column for John Balick. Is he still around?
Oh, John, yes, yes.
Is he still living down there, or what happened to him?
Same area, yeah. I think he's more involved with the Fitness Expo now. You know, he let go of the magazine.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been quite a few years. But I really enjoyed doing columns there with John. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Denise, are you a competitor now or were you a competitor?
So I just did my first bikini competition with the INBA in March. Okay. So I finally gained the courage and discipline to train, work out, and step up on stage for the very first time. So it was an amazing experience, but I've been involved in natural bodybuilding for, I would say, the past 20 years of my life, mm-hmm. working alongside with my parents, building the INBA, PNBA into a successful, largest natural bodybuilding organization in the world. So
that's cool. So what made you decide to compete all of a sudden after 20 years?
You know what? I thought to myself, it's now or never. And I figured I had the time and my mind was in the right place because I believe that everything involves the mindset. And once you can give that time and discipline and focus, then, you can achieve anything. So I was just ready to take on that challenge and personally challenge myself. Having just turned 30 years old, I figure, you know what, this would be a great thing to start doing and to be involved in, and to also earn a little bit more credibility within the organization as well, and with the INBA Global family members that we have. So,
yeah. How about you, Denny? Have you been a competitor, or are you still doing anything?
Well, I've always trained all my life, and I'm still trained 3 or 4 times a week. I have a great partner with me, who comes and works out with. Yeah. But no, I never competed. I wanted to compete, but at the time it was a lot of steroids and stuff, and I also had a lot of injuries from playing football and other sports that I really, I couldn't do a lot of things that I needed to do to get to that, position. But
yeah.
I've always trained.
Yeah. It takes me back to when I first decided to do a competition. I tell you what, when you go through something like that, Denise, it's a whole different ball game. It gives you a different perspective.
And 100% it does.
It really does. And I remember going through that that a lot of times it's kind of with anything. A lot of times it's just the unknown is scary. You don't know exactly this first time out, how you're going to be. I remember I was so pissed off at myself when I was dieting that I was married at the time when I decided to do this at the age of 27. And I didn't know how all this was going to affect me. I was mad, especially towards the end, doing all this dieting and stuff. This is my first time ever. I mean, I was an athlete, played football. We never had to go to that extreme. But I have to tell you, once you go through that process, that was the bug that really bit me. It changed my whole career after I competed in the first show. It changed at that point, I was working on a family dairy. And after I did that, my whole life it turned around. I was an athlete and, it didn't work out for me. So this kind of replaced that. And it put me on my path that I'm on now, which is my livelihood, So it's pretty amazing when you go through the for the first time. Are you planning on doing it again, Denise?
Yes, I am. So it's funny that you mentioned that it just kind of changes your whole life, because I thought, you know, I'm just going to do this once and, you know, experience it and then I'll be done with it. But, you know, once I stepped up on that stage and I accomplished, you know, getting up on stage and placing, I was like, you know what, I want to do this again and I want to bring an even better package. And there's just something to say, for when you're competing against yourself pretty much mentally and doing it naturally, that is just so empowering, you know, not using any kind of performance enhancements and actually putting in the work and taking the time to see the results is just a feeling that is hard to explain, but that I encourage other people to, you know, try and see, you know, how they feel doing it.
Yeah. You know, over the years, I've worked with a lot of people. And again, you know, once you have gone through that, so many people, you know, they've come to me before and they say, well, I want to compete. But so many people actually like the idea of it more than having to go through that process, because, you know, there's a lot of sacrifice that you have to have and make. And not only you are the one that pays for your sacrifice, but the people around you sometimes too, you know. But I wouldn't trade it, ever again. I mean, it's one of the best things I ever did. You know, when I first came out in the industry, one of the things that I wrote these training courses, and the first one that we wrote was Bulgarian Burst. But all of our training courses was, you're talking about competing naturally. And, you know, that's exactly when I first started, where I came from. I wanted to do it the natural way. And so we wrote our training courses based on that, you know. And but let me ask you, Denise, when you're competing on stage nowadays, because back then it was like when we competed in a natural event, the reality was that not everybody was competing naturally, which is pretty frustrating. Do you notice that that kind of stuff goes on? Maybe not in the women's, but like in the men's competitions, is that still going on? And if so, how are you overcoming that now that you have your organization? What are you guys doing to change that around to make that a more of a fair event?
Yeah, so I would say over the years, there has not been a concern of whether, you know, personally I was competing with somebody that was using a performance enhancement or, you know, having been involved in the business, I haven't seen that as much as it used to be. We've been established for 31 years and we've been using WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, who tests the Olympic athletes. So that in itself is a deterrent for people to not come and compete that are using some kind of performance enhancement. So we also do have the Hall of Shame, which is how we remain transparent as an organization, as a true natural organization. We have the Hall of Shame on our website, which is where we do post athletes that have failed the WADA tests that have competed. So within this year, we have failed five to seven athletes, I believe. And some of them are using hardcore steroids or they're using a stimulant that was banned on the WADA substance list. So luckily over the years, people know that our reputation for the IMBA PMBA is that we have the highest testing standards. So it's not something that I worry about personally or that I worry about for the athletes competing in the organization. That there's somebody using. Usually, most of the time, when somebody is using, they will be caught. And like I said, we remain transparent and we post that on our Hall of Shame on our website.
I think that's really cool, you know, because I think to begin with, you're making a statement and saying, look, you know, this is what we believe in. And you better believe it to the point that you'll be on a wall of shame if, you know, that does happen, you know. With the organization that you're working with, do they test like throughout the year or is it a one-time test? How does that work out?
So we do in and out of competition testing. So whether they're in competition competing or if they're out of competition, we'll test them. We have the right to do that. They sign a waiver. Then we also test target testing as well as random drug testing.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's the way to do it, because that was the thing, because I know, like, in the cycling world, you know, one of the things that those athletes had to do was year-round testing, and it sounds like that's kind of what you're doing. I think that's really important because, you know, back in when I was doing this thing, it was just like if you knew how the steroid actually, how long it took to get out of your system, you could beat the test a lot of times. And that's what made it really frustrating, you know, to go out and do these events. But the way you're doing it definitely sets a precedent, and I'm really glad to see that. Do you get much pushback from actually, I mean, when you say that you post that, are you posting the athlete's name, the full, their first and last name?
We actually have them sign a waiver before they even compete. And then also when we're taking their sample, we inform them of our policy for the second time. And so they consent to us, you know, posting their name, their picture, and what they were found banned on, the substances that were banned. So we've had to go to court a couple of times. However, when we go, we end up winning every case because we follow the chain of custody, we do our due diligence, and they are forewarned before they compete and step up on that stage.
You know something, I commend you. I mean, if you're going to sign that, you're definitely taking your own, you know, you get what you get when you sign stuff like that. And so I'm glad that you guys are doing that. I think it's really something that's necessary. You know, in my career, I got to a point where I'm just being upfront, even though that I competed natural for quite a few years until I got to the more like the national and regional and national. And I thought, you know, I had to make a choice back then because I wanted to compete at a higher level, and there was just no way. And again, some people said, well, you sold out, and maybe that's the case. You know, we all have our opinions about that, but I think that a lot of us would rather compete naturally than to have to say, if I want to get better and win and compete at this level, even if you're competing naturally, you're competing against guys that were using the stuff. It's like, well, where am I going to compete? You know?
Yeah. They weren't testing that well. It wasn't that those natural, so-called natural organizations. They had, like, for instance, polygraph testing, or some type of urine testing or something like that. But it wasn't anything good. Now with WADA, it's unbelievable. You know, I mean, they have 400 things that they check. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, you have an even playing field. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I think that's pretty cool.
I would say that it's been an uphill battle with trying to become more popular within the industry of bodybuilding, you know, with enforcing the testing standards that we enforce. But we're all about integrity and standing for something that matters, that's true, and what we believe in. So that's why the past 31 years, you know, we've continued to persevere, and we are the largest natural organization in the world with 60 countries affiliated with us. We test with the highest standards, which is WADA. And fortunately enough, we've been given the opportunity to purchase Iron Man magazine and spread the word of natural bodybuilding and the natural athlete. So we're fortunate to have had the opportunity. I believe that, you know, as long as you work hard and you stay focused and dedicated, then, you know, your time will come and things will pay off. It's been a while. But also, too, what's really cool is the fact that Generation Iron has contacted the IMBA, PMBA, and is going to be doing the fourth Generation Iron on natural bodybuilding and our natural athletes. So
sounds like you're getting some traction.
It is. It's, finally coming to fruition. And it's just, you know, if you stay true to yourself and what you believe in, it ends up paying off in the long run.
It does. And, like I said, you always pay a price. There's always consequences because the stand that you're taking, you know, you're going to get pushback from, you know, certain groups of people out there. But I applaud you guys for standing strong, and you know, when you believe in something, people like that, you know, they're going to be attracted to to your organization. I'm sure of it. One of the things that you made a comment about earlier was about competing for yourself. I think that's really important. You know, when I competed, there were so many times after the event that athletes would come back and, you know, they were, I got screwed, and they throw their trophy up against the wall. It was pretty bad, you know, and I always, you know, I'm pretty competitive, but I always thought, you know, my goal is going to be just to come in and do the best that I can possibly do and don't worry about the rest, because it's kind of it's a subjective type of sport anyway. It's not a black and white the way, unless it's changed now. I mean, it's been a lot of years since I competed, but I just think that I think the focus, because the athletes that I've worked with before to compete, I always tell them, don't get so caught up in that next person and how good they're going to be. Just worry about, you know, take care of what you can control and just be the best that you can be and let the chips fall where they may. And like you said, eventually through hard work, you know, it's bound to pay off for you. And so it sounds like that works. That's in line with your own thinking.
You know, Leo, the sport has changed. You know, when I was promoting with the NPC, and that you'll see that reaction of people throwing trophies. And in fact, I was very disappointed. My brother almost got in a fight with that because just the attitude of people. But once we started natural, honestly, you find a different type of an athlete. An athlete's very camaraderie, trying to help each other, more fun. It's a different thing. And everybody tells me that, honestly, when they come to our shows, they say, you know, this is a different feeling we have, experience than we had before. So, you know, drug-free sports is a little different, I think, and it's so great about it. You know, I've traveled, maybe, you know, more than 60 countries. I've traveled many millions of miles, I might say, to you, and spoke to many to get to 60 countries together. So it's a great feeling when we have all of us united now and trying to do the right thing. So, but we still have problems, you know, with sponsors and stuff. They still, you know, they want to sponsor the freaks and stuff. So it is great when we get some people that really understand where the sport should be and what the sport it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, even I've noticed, like, even I'm still a member at Gold's Gym, and I go back there, you know, once every 6 weeks or so. I just noticed the, like what you're saying, Denny, the environment's much different now, you know, whereas not only the intensity, I mean, the whole thing has changed inside. It's kind of weird, to be honest with you, compared to the way we used to train in there. That in itself is much different, but you're right about that. You know, it's like before, people were more open about sharing what they have learned and then passing that forward. But now it's like nobody wants to, they don't want to do that anymore. It's like more isolated, and the environment has changed. So I'm glad to hear that, you know, what's going on with you. And I guess things are bound to circle back and come back again, maybe a little bit the way they were before when it was better, I guess. I don't know. But one of the things that, when I got and met Tom Platz was right around the time, I assume that you guys remember the WBF?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mauro DiPasquale and Platz, they were a part of that deal. You probably remember that. And yeah. You know, this is exactly what they were trying to do back then, was to clean the sport up. And and it was a great concept, you know. And the thing, it didn't last, you know, because like you said, Denny, I think that there's a certain group of people that want to come see a freak show. And, yeah. And then what they ended up doing, which was unfair to Mauro, was they said, well, you know, he had the high-fat diet and the keto diet. It was actually a high-fat diet, which I wrote a book with Mauro called The Anabolic Diet. And I know how well that diet worked because I used it in the days I was competing as a natural athlete. And the reason why that didn't work out for that group of people back then, it wasn't the athletes that didn't follow through. They just were not, they just could not, you know, they were so used to being induced that they just could not follow that that program all the way through. So I don't think that ever really, you know, you guys sound like you've dug in long enough that you're following through where people are starting to see the benefit, you know, and they didn't do that back then.
Yeah, it's like I always say, is about cigarette smoking. You know, in 50s, everybody smoked. 60s, they're starting to be aware of it. Now you can't even smoke anywhere. Nobody would like you to be next to somebody smoking. Same thing with steroids, to the point now that people are getting tired of seeing this, you know, unhealthy bodies, you know, these freaks. You know, they want something that people want to have a nice diet, nice way of training. Even the body style has changed. You know, it's not as much bodybuilding, more of a physique, more of abs, more, you know. So yeah. Things have changed. People seeing that health is the most important thing.
And people want to live longer. They want to do this for, you know, their health, life, and longevity. And they can see that, you know, these performance enhancements are not assisting with the life and longevity of themselves. So
I always thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, here you look at some guys, and I was one of those guys. Listen, I'm a hypocrite, you know, in some ways, but you know, it's supposed to be a healthy sport. You look like you're healthy up there to some degree. I mean, the freakishness has changed all that, but I mean, you're, you know, really lean and you look healthy, and yet your inside of your body is just ripped to shreds, you know? So it was kind of a, you know, you're supposed to be healthy on the outside, but you're torn up on the inside. Didn't make any sense, really. You know, are there, when you're fast forwarding to now, the athletes that are doing this naturally now, are you, is there anybody in the industry or maybe a part of what you guys are doing that are out there educating people, you know, on how to do stuff like this? Is there anybody, because education is key here.
Well, it's a magazine that we have. That's why we got the magazine, to try and educate people. But I, you know, I don't see anybody, just one person, you know, and that's the deal.
I mean, I would say a lot of our athletes are professionals within the medical field and or training and exercising. They're, you know, nutritionists and personal trainers. So we do have a lot of the athletes that compete in the IMBA, PMBA are professionals within a health and wellness field. And they still, you know, work, they have families, they have hobbies, and they're still able to train and compete, you know, competitively and as a professional athlete. So I think that's what's really neat to see with the athletes that we have in the IMBA, PMBA Global family is professionals that are still able to juggle life and work and then also compete competitively as a natural athlete.
Yeah. Are there anybody making a full-time living at this? You know, like with me, for example, I didn't get to the point where bodybuilding, competing in the shows actually made any kind of a living for me. And to be honest with you, most of the guys weren't making a living at it. I mean, maybe the top two or three guys, and I don't know how it's changed now, but, you know, I made my living at it actually selling training courses, and you know, it wasn't through competition, it was through like what you guys are doing, education, training courses, and that kind of thing. So are there people out there that are doing this like full-time, and if so, how are they making their living?
I would say there isn't anybody doing it like 100% full-time and you know, being self-sufficient and rich off of competing naturally. I would say that there are trainers and nutritionists that, you know, train other people to compete, and then they also compete themselves. I would say that's probably the most popular way. You know, they kind of have a little bit of different businesses, different side hustles. They also, not only do they train people, but they have like a prep company, and then they also can teach people how to pose. So, I mean, we've given a lot of people the opportunity to create their own business and prep people to compete. So we have a professional figure athlete. She's a strength and conditioning coach, personal trainer. She's also a nutritionist, and she has her own meal prep company. She teaches people how to pose, and then she also spray tans. So there's quite a few people within the IMBA, PMBA that have been able to create their own businesses with basically everything you need in order to prep for a competition. Yeah. But as far as people just solely relying on, you know, sponsorships and prize money, it's not necessarily the case within the natural sports.
You know, the Natural Olympia that we have, it's the pinnacle of natural sports. And we did it because we wanted like an Olympics for the natural athlete, which I started that in 1998. We have given out over 500,000 in cash, given 5 cars, and now it's going to be 3 Harleys. So I try my best to give back to the athletes as much as we can, but we don't have the main sponsors yet to come aboard so we can give the money. And I always say this to any sponsor, you will write the check directly to the athletes. You don't give it to us. We don't want the money. It's not about that. It's about the athletes and the sport. So if a big company comes in and helps us out and supports the event, I want directly the company to give the money to the athletes for their winnings.
Which is exactly what, Leo, you're doing, is you're going to be sponsoring the professional bodybuilding category for the Natural Olympia. So that prize money is going to go straight to first place, second place, and third place. So,
yeah, looking forward to that. You know, I've been out of the industry now for about, not totally out of it, but, you know, back when we were in it pretty good, we were in all the magazines, and then I got out of it for a while, and I'm really excited. When I heard that Ironman was doing this naturally, I was very excited about making this phone call to see what that was all about. How many of these shows are you guys putting on throughout the year? Is it 4?
No, we do actually about 50 shows in the United States, 125 worldwide. We do 50 here in the United States. The major shows is about 11 shows are really pro-am shows. Usually we have Chicago, New York, LA. You know, it's various parts of the United States for the pro level. Plus worldwide. Yeah. We have the world in Greece. You know, we had it this year. Next year is going to be in Romania. We have the World Cup. We had it in Australia, in Sydney. We had the Asian Pacific Championships in India, Bangalore, India. So, you know, we have various major shows all over the world.
How do you make something like that, especially when you're going, you know, away from where you live, basically, in the States? How do you make all that work? Obviously, you have people helping you, but how do you put that all together?
Well, you know, we have other promoters that have the same idea, you know, the same heart passion about the sport and the passion. So that we work together. We go there, we run the shows for them, but it's their shows. I mean, it's our titles. But we have the same rules and regulations and the definitions of all the divisions. And so we all work together and it comes out great. I mean, we had it in Greece, we had it there. We had over 38 countries, over 400 athletes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they're big shows.
It's very popular. Natural bodybuilding is very popular within the other countries. I would say more so than it is here in the United States. So when we go to other countries and IMBA, PMBA is, you know, affiliated with that country, it's an excitement for the athletes. You know, they're looking for this natural outlet, this natural organization that they can, you know, compete in. And it means a lot to them for it to be fair and balanced and natural, and the testing that is done. So it's a really neat experience, and you'll get to see when you're at the Natural Olympia all the different countries that are going to be coming in their team uniforms, you know, how emotional the experience is for them to even just come to the United States and then compete and represent their country. It's a really unbelievable experience every year to witness that and to provide the platform for these athletes to compete naturally and to create friends from around the world. So I'm excited for you guys to be there.
That's a whole different dynamic. I know some of the athletes that play professional baseball that end up or they have an opportunity to go play in the Olympics for their country. And then so many of them say that they feel a bigger excitement and a bigger sense when they're competing for their country. You know, it's about something bigger. And I can tell now I'm starting to understand what you're meaning about, you know, when you're bringing a country in, they're bringing a team in. Not only are they doing it for themselves, but they're doing it for their country. That just has to automatically, that changes the dynamic. It takes it away from me to us, we.
Yeah, because there isn't, you know, anything else that offers that besides the actual Olympics. So and bodybuilding is not in the Olympics. So that's why we have created the Pinnacle of Natural Sports, the Natural Olympia, and countries from all over the world come to compete, and we play their national anthem. They get to step up on the podiums for first, second, and third. They have their flag draped around them, and then we also give them either gold, silver, and bronze, and a wreath. So we try to make it very special, and I think that's 100% what sets the IMBA PNB apart from any other organization, and especially these so-called natural organizations, is because we have a passion for this, we have a purpose for this, and we stand for something. And integrity, again, I have to go back to that. That's one of our biggest things, is integrity, and, you know, treating people like they're human beings. You know, everybody makes mistakes, and everybody gets peer pressured into, you know, wanting to take a performance enhancement and, or, you know, wanting a quick result. That's fine. You know, but then I think in the long run, they end up figuring out that that wasn't the best choice for them. But, you know, we provide the platform, which is natural, testing to a standard, the highest standard, and creating a place for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's why everybody has a great experience and creates friendships, you know, that last for forever. Because, I mean, Leo, you know, mentally, this sport is extremely hard. I mean, you're pushing your body physically, you're pushing your mind mentally, you know, you're having to eat food that you don't really want to eat, but you want a certain result, and you have to sacrifice, you know, hanging out with your family, friends, and having a social life. So when you find like-minded people that go through the same thing and that want to share their experience, or, you know, any kind of tricks that they have or tips that they have, it's very meaningful and very impressionable to experience that with other people. So.
Yeah, one of my best experiences was going overseas and doing seminars. I was lucky because I hooked up with Tom. You know, he was one of the best at doing seminars. The guy was amazing. But boy, you're right. You know, I got to be in Eastern Europe. I went all over the place. And I think as much as it was fun to do the competition and things like that, it was even a better experience to be able to interact with the different cultures. I mean, that in itself was something. And to this day, I'm sure that's the same thing with your organization. To this day, I have people that are still in Bulgaria that are contacts. It's pretty amazing when I think about that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's crazy.
So let me ask you, for the upcoming show that you're doing, is there I remember that in order to compete at higher levels, you had to qualify. Now, how does that work as far as the men's competition now? Do they have to win, you know, in order to compete at the Olympia? Give me a little bit the process of that. Do they have to win something to qualify? How does that work?
So there's two different requirements. If we're talking about an amateur athlete, the requirement for an amateur athlete is to compete in two competitions that would qualify them for the Natural Olympia. So at least two events for amateurs. And then for the professional athletes, they have to compete in one event that's a pro show, and then they're automatically qualified to go and compete at the Natural Olympia.
Got it. And the same, is that the same? You have women competing, obviously, don't you?
Yes, men and women, same requirements for both.
And then all the other countries in the different, Europe and Australia, New Zealand have the same kind of requirements, so they build their team and they bring them.
I see. So it's pretty standard then. So everybody's kind of on the same page that way.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And what about, like, when I was, you know, I was pretty surprised when I came back after a 13-year layoff, and I was now 56 or 53. And, you know, when I first started competing, there was like, it was men and it was couples competing together. Did they have any of that now? Then when I came back, you know, 15 years later after the layoff, they had board competition. They all of a sudden had all these categories that we didn't have. And I understood why they did that, because it made it more commercial, you know, for a larger group of people to come watch. But in your women's competition, is it figure, bikini, and all these breakdowns? Is it the same as like the IFBB?
Yes, we have the figure, we have physique, we have bikini, sports model, we have a swimsuit model, we have an angels category. So we have a transformation category. So, you know, health and wellness comes in all different shapes and sizes, and you start, you know, at different stages. So we have a stage where it's the transformation, where you're on a body quest on your journey and you've lost so many pounds. And a lot of those athletes then end up competing in a competitive category like the bikini or the sports model or the figure.
Oh, I see. Category. Yeah, so transformational, that's like somebody who's like first time out, green. And
yeah, and they've lost maybe a lot of weight or had a traumatic, you know,
medical issue
or something happened to them. And, you know, they've kind of lost their way through health, and then they ended up gaining it back and having more self-control and losing weight and being confident enough to share their story on stage and stepping up on stage. And then it just kind of goes from there, and they move on to a more competitive category. So
very, very interesting approach. I like that. Now, you're talking about, you said sports model. What was the other one? The sports model, not the wings or angel wings, but the sports model. What was the other one?
We have women's physique. And then we have Bikini Divas, which is probably the most popular across any organization, is the bikini category.
We started Bikini Divas, bikini, in the 80s, before anybody else had it.
Okay. But then there, then you have a, what's a sports model exactly? I find this really interesting, these categories.
So sports model is pretty much an athlete that looks athletic and toned and fit within a sports bra and shorts. So something that you would see some women wearing to the gym, and basically anybody that would look good on the cover of a magazine. Okay. That's the sports model category.
Okay. So then, after the sports model, would that be physique? Is that the next progression or a different progression?
What it would go is the body quest. And then you would move into the swimsuit model, which is a one piece that the women can wear. And it's kind of like a Sports Illustrated one piece swimsuit category. And then it would move to the bikini diva category. And then from there, we would go to the angels category, and then sports model. And then you'll start seeing more of the physiques getting harder, more defined in the figure category. And then it would go physique for women, and then the bodybuilding for women.
Gotcha. You know, one of the big dilemmas back in the day was, you know, trying to, you know, really have a clear cut category for these women. Because like when Rachel McLish started, you know, and then all of a sudden they became more muscular. It was almost like they didn't know where they were at. I remember being at the Arnold Classic, and it was like people were actually unhappy about all that. And I remember Arnold saying, well, they'll figure it out. The judges will figure it out, because they didn't have a clear cut as to what category that a woman should be in, you know. And it sounds like you guys have really kind of identified that a little bit differently.
Well, you know, we saw what Weider did, so we wanted to do something different. We want to do it naturally. So, yeah. You know, once they start letting the girls using that to performing art, performing enhancing drugs, then it ruined the whole sport. Now you can't find, IFBB doesn't even have bodybuilding anymore, as I understand it, for women, and because it's become look like men. So we want to keep it, you know, natural and beautiful, and the way that women's physique is. Now, Rachel McLeish is one of the top. I mean, that's how bodybuilding should be. The extreme was Rachel McLeish. She was a natural athlete. She looked fantastic. And then they started using, you know, the other athletes came in, and then they wouldn't stop it. Weider had the opportunity to stop that. Everybody had that. Even Arnold has the opportunity to stop that. But they really don't. And it's a little disappointing about that. And, you know, I admire Arnold for what he's done and all the great things that happened that he has done. But one thing he can really do is to stop this happening by testing. And he can do it tomorrow. You know, it's not anything else.
Listen, I totally agree with that. You know, I always thought even in other sports, you know, they talk about testing is too expensive, and you know, they give all the excuses why they don't do that. But I think you're right. You know, so what if it costs more money? And it is about the money. And I think that's what ends up happening a lot of times is profits before everything else. And it changes the dynamics of the sport, you know?
Exactly.
But
that's exactly what sets us apart is our integrity. And we're not willing to risk our integrity and what we truly believe, you know, just because, yes, it is expensive. Those WADA tests are extremely expensive.
Yes. $400-$500.
But we're, you know, serious about the sport and providing the even playing field. And so, you know, we're committed to providing the best testing that we can.
Yeah, that's quite something. How many athletes are you anticipating coming to the, I assume that the Men's Olympia, is that the one that's going to attract the biggest crowd, or what do you think?
Yeah, it will be. It's the natural Olympia, and it's going to be probably between, I will say, depends on the year. Sometimes 400, sometimes 500. Probably, I will think around between that 400 to 500 people coming in, athletes. So there'll be it should be a good show.
Yeah, and how many times have you put the Olympia on?
It's the 22nd years, 22 years. Started in 1998. I brought it. The first one was done in Greece because that's where the Olympics started. And I took it all the way to Greece. We had about 30 countries come in there, close to about 150 to 180 competitors, I think they came from all over the world to do that. And now it traveled for a while to different countries. We took it to New Zealand, Australia. We took it to many countries, Europe. But then we settled in Vegas. And because everybody used to go to Vegas, everybody wants to come to the United States, and that's what we did.
So how many years have you had it now in Las Vegas?
I think it's what, 6 or 7 years now, Denise?
I think it's like 6 years.
6 years, yeah. And I have another 3-year contract with the Rio.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, my next question was, it's going to be held at the Rio?
Correct, yeah. They're major convention center area there. It's very nice.
And how many days is this going to be?
It's a 4-day event. They're coming on Thursday to register, and then we have a big mixer for all the athletes. On Friday, we have the amateur athletes, plus we have the press pro press conference, which we started to have. It's kind of fun, exciting thing because it's live on, you know, on YouTube, and they start talking about each other, and you know, it's a little thing, you know, pre fight type of thing, you know, for people.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday we have all the pros, and then on Sunday. And then we award the prize money, you know, the Harley and all that. And then at Sunday, we have a huge registration for all the athletes, all the pros.
On Sunday, we have a huge brunch, and it's pretty much like the closing ceremonies of the Natural Olympia. And we induct our Hall of Fame inductees into the Natural Bodybuilding Hall of Fame.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a really neat experience. It's 4-day event, and we just get people together from all the other countries, and you know, pretty much like they would for the village for the Olympics. They have the Olympic village. So
I like it. I think you guys are doing a great thing. I never knew about this. I mean, you know, I heard about this, and I just didn't know that it was to this extent. I am amazed, and I really can't wait to be at the event. I know we're going to be there, and we're all looking forward to meeting you guys.
Yes, we're very excited.
Danny, I want to ask you and Denise a question, and this is a training question. I want you guys to answer for me, what is your favorite exercise?
Body part?
Yeah, just think,
it's always bench press, you know. It's just that the only problem is that I've done so many years, I've kind of messed up my shoulder, so probably biceps now, you know, do curls.
Is it still your favorite exercise, though?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's a good
idea. Denise, what's your favorite exercise?
Oh, my gosh. I actually like shoulders. So I enjoy doing shoulder workouts. I feel like, you know, women that have nice shoulders and even men that have nice shoulders, it creates just like a great visual of like someone's posture and like their physique, and it's hard to grow those. So I enjoy doing any kind of shoulder exercises.
Okay. Now, second question, what is your least favorite exercise, Jenny?
You know, the problem is that it is my favorite, but I don't enjoy as much as my legs. Because I hurt my legs when I was playing football, and I messed them up really bad, surgeries. And I always wanted to build my legs, but it just hurts so much, and I just can't walk out. So I think probably doing, you know, leg presses and squats.
Okay, how about you, Denise?
Yeah, I'd probably have to say the same. You know, the love-hate relationship is that lower body for the women. So, you know, the legs, the glutes. I hate doing it, but I also enjoy doing it. So definitely the legs and the glutes.
That was going to be my next exercise, is like, which is the exercise you love to hate? And for me, it was like, you know, it's kind of a toss up, man. I used to do heavy rows, and you know, being bent over like that where you can't breathe. It's like after you got done doing a set of rows, it's like, you know, when you came back out of that, it's like coming out of the water. Being underwater, you know, you had to catch your breath, but man, squatting for sure. You know, people who tell me that they love squatting, I tell them they're lying or they're not heavy enough, because I never had. In fact, to be quite honest with you, my whole routine was a love hate. You know, it was to that point that when we went to the gym, it was just like hanging on for dear life. And I don't know, I always liked the result of it afterwards and the high that you got from all the endorphin kick. I think I like that. But you know something, there was enough love and hate there that kept me in it for 20 years, and I'm still doing it, just like you guys. It's because
Hey, you can't let it go. I mean, it's just always, you feel good. I mean, after exercise, you feel so good, you know. And even if you're depressed or if you had a rough day, you do some exercise, you just feel refreshed and really well, you know.
One of the best things for you, and I know that we've all been through a stress in our life, and. But one of the best things I would do, even if I didn't want to, was just go in and get a workout and just change the whole perspective of things, you know?
Definitely. So, that blood pumping, that oxygen circulating, you know.
Yep. And my wife still thinks I'm nuts. I mean, you know, it's a bad habit. I like to train really early in the morning. And, you know, I certainly don't have to get up at this hour, but I'm up at 3 o'clock every morning. And
wow.
I'm not moving real fast, you know, but by the time I get to the gym, it's 4 o'clock, but I just love that routine. And the funny thing was, is I've never been an early morning person, but I've been doing it like that for, you know, more than 20 years. And I got a feeling that they're going to end up dragging me out of my gym feet first, because I just keep going back. And because if I don't, you know, it's like the worst of two evils. If I don't work out, I'm going to be a nightmare. I already know that. So it's just better for everybody if I just go work out.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, guys, I really do appreciate you guys coming on. And I'm really happy that we did this interview, because I know a hell of a lot more about what you guys are doing. And again, I applaud you for taking this stand. I think it's something that's really needed. And I can't wait to see you guys in Vegas.
Yep, we're
Same
looking
here.
Forward to it. Thank you so
Thank you,
much
Leo.
For
Thank you for your support.
Today, your support, oh, and then...
Yeah, I can't wait. I hope it all turns out really well for you this year.
Thank you Great. So much.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Very good.
All right, bye-bye. Bye.